Z-Trim Appetite Control is perfect for taking the edge off hunger.
I lost 6 pounds the first week and never felt hungry.
I lost a full pant size.
I've lost 15 pounds in 2 months without dieting.
Without dieting.
You're hearing the success stories of people who have discovered Z-Trim Appetite Control. Developed by the USDA, all-natural Z-Trim helps you feel satisfied before you eat more than you should.
I can breeze through work without distracting hunger pains.
I don't have to exercise, and I still eat the foods that I love.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is a healthy way to help manage your weight regardless of diet or exercise.
I simply take 2 capsules before each meal.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is fantastic.
For people who need to manage their weight with limited physical activity, Z-Trim provides a naturally healthy option.
To order Z-Trim Appetite Control capsules made with USDA-developed Z-Trim, go to ztrim.com. That's ztrim.com. And enter the code word NATURAL for a 10% listener discount. Or call 1-877-MY-Z-TRIM. The only thing you have to lose is weight.
Objective to succeed, and success is a country that governs, defends itself.
Good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on Novem Radio. Thanks for tuning in, and a big thanks to Jeff Farias at KPCA or KPHX in Phoenix for filling in for me last night. We're being assaulted by baby viruses in this family. It just never, ever seems to stop. It makes Molly healthier, her pediatrician says, and it makes Kathy and I weaker. But anyway, thanks, Jeff, for sitting in. This is the Malloy program on this Tuesday night. In lying abed, as they used to say, last night, I was watching some of the television that's available out there. Oy. Oh, my God. But the commercials this time of the year are in astonishingly poor taste. The success of the celebration of the birth of the Christian Savior is measured in dollars spent at the various malls and retail outlets. Now, I'm certainly not going to be a Grinch and say that's a bad thing, but shouldn't it be, and we've said this, I think, every year for the past 20 years that I've been on the air, shouldn't there be a national, like, gift-giving holiday? Make it winter solstice. You know, why not do that? That's such a good idea, because all those emblematic signatures of Christmas that we're also familiar with are druidic. They have to do with Yule. They have to do with winter solstice, and gift giving and drinking and partying and revelry and all kinds of good fun, as in the song "Deck the Halls with Boughs of Holly." Why not do that? And then sometime in July or August, celebrate the birth of the Christian Messiah, which is probably around the time of the year that the baby Yehu was born. Wouldn't that make more? Shouldn't that be done that way? Yeah, right. The other thing that is that one absorbs lying abed watching television, and I can only come up with two words: poor Iraq. I mean, every day, every single day. Now, I realize there are other slaughters going on in various parts of the world. Sub-Saharan Africa has more or less become a huge abattoir. It just never stops there, country after country after country after country. There is slaughter in the Far East, but poor Iraq. Today, what was it, Kathy? 60 people wiped out. Working class or poor people in a country with the unemployment rate hovering around 60%, people who had been summoned to a certain area to meet what they thought was a job or an employment broker who had lots of jobs available for carpenters and plumbers and painters. And of course, the job broker was a suicide bomber. And when enough people were gathered about, the button was pushed or the string was pulled. 60 dead, a couple of hundred wounded. Poor, poor Iraq. Poor Iraq. That's, you know, what can you say? As far as our involvement in poor Iraq, we have some things to say about that tonight, as we do every night on this program. President Chuckelnuts walked out to the podium with Condoleezza Rice and Dick Cheney yesterday, proving that they haven't been disappeared to Guantanamo after all, not yet anyway. So we do have some moron sounds for you tonight. And, excuse me, some, I guess, very, very dark fun and frivolity from Von Rumskull's last official Q&A at the Pentagon last Friday. We've got some sound from that that I think you will find. It sounds like a play put together inside an asylum prior to the discovery or the development, I should say, of very efficient drugs that keep people subdued and quiet inside mental institutions. I want you to hear some of this stuff. Listen to the madman Rumsfeld sing his swan song about his success in Iraq and how the media misrepresented the war there. And then, of course, we have some information for you that was originally popped up in the Iraq Survey Group's report and has now made its way through the Washington Post and various online blogs, that just the opposite was true. The violence in Iraq was underreported. It was suppressed. So all that stuff that you and I have heard over the past year and a half or 2 years about how the media never focuses on the good stuff turns out was just another in a seemingly endless series of lies by the members of this Bush crime family. Astonishing. And then finally, Foxy the Snowman came out today and explained that Raisin Brain was too busy with his Giftmas toys to come out with his big way forward plan for Iraq before the first of next year. So to the soldiers and Marines who are in Iraq, the men and the women, they will continue to die. They will be continue to be asked to kill. But from an American family standpoint, the only thing important is they will continue to die as George W. Bush dithers and hems and haws and stalls because he has no way forward. There is no way forward. But, of course, looks like we'll be staying the course for a few more weeks anyway, despite the mounting death toll, despite the fact that now 70% of the American public is telling Bush to get out of Iraq. Fully 65% is telling him to get the hell out of the White House. But, of course, with the Democrats having made clear that impeachment is off the table, it'll be 2 years before that happens. Now, I have a Christmas story for you. And this was in the San Francisco Chronicle. It is about a game called what's based on the Left Behind series, that a series of books that have sold just tens of millions of copies about post-rapture world, written by Tim LaHaye and Jerry Jenkins, and based on their interpretation of the Book of Revelation. Really sick stuff, poorly written, junk, garbage books, but the kind that Christian evangelicals love because it reinforces their worldview that somehow they are special and are going to rapture into heaven while the rest of us boil in our own body fat. But anyway, a liberal and progressive Christian group say a new computer game in which players must either convert non-Christians or kill them is the wrong gift to be giving this holiday season, and that Walmart should yank this game off its shelves. David in San Francisco emailed me this earlier this evening. This was not on our menu for tonight, but when I saw this, it was just like, oh my God, here we go again. There are two organizations, the Campaign to Defend the Constitution and the Christian Alliance for Progress. Those are both liberal or progressive Christian groups. And they plan to demand that Walmart dump this video game. It's called Left Behind, Eternal Forces. It's a computer game inspired by those poorly written, murderous Christian novels. The president of Left Behind Games, yeah, there is something called Left Behind Games, a guy named Jerry Fritschner, says the game actually is pacifist because players lose what are called spirit points every time they gun down non-believers rather than convert them. They can earn spirit points, again, by having their character pray. So now give this to a 12-year-old and say, now, given a choice of gunning down someone with a Muslim name or converting him, what are you going to do? Well, what's a kid going to say? He's going to say, where's the goddamn trigger? That's all the kid's going to say, although he may leave out the epithet. But he'll say that. He'll say, where's the trigger? Just give me the trigger. Fritschner, the president of Left Behind Games, says, quote, you are fighting a defensive battle in the game. You are sort of a freedom fighter because you're fighting the Antichrist. Now, Walmart spokesman says they have no plans to pull this game from any of the 200 Walmarts offering the game, including seven of them in California. I've got a little more on this when we come back from the break. Stick around. I'm Mike Mullock.
This is Mike Malloy, live on the Nova M Radio Network.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's more Mike Malloy.
So the game is Convert or Die, and it's put out by the Left Behind book games people. You are fighting on behalf of Jesus, and you are to kill people who won't be converted. This is what the Christian evangelicals have in store for you Jews. You do know that, right? This is how the game is played. They support Israel in all that, or anything that Israel does, until their Messiah returns. And once their Messiah returns, this is according to their view, then the Jews will have one chance. And if you're Jewish and you know all this, you also know that then they will lop your head off when you say, no, we're waiting for the real Messiah. Your guy is, you know. Hey. So anyway, a Walmart spokesman says there's no plan to pull this horrendous, violent Christian Christmas gift game from their shelves. A spokeswoman for Walmart said, quote, we look at the community to see where it will sell. We have customers who are buying it and really haven't received a lot of complaints about it from our customers at this time, end quote. Now, Clark Stevens, who's co-director of one of the Christian liberal groups, the Campaign to Defend the Constitution, said the game is not peaceful or diplomatic. Stevens said, quote, it's an incredibly violent video game. Sure, there's no blood. You see the dead just fade off the screen. He goes on to say, but you're moving... You're mowing down your enemy with a gun. It pushes a message of religious intolerance. You can either play for the good side by trying to convert non-believers to your side, or you can join the Antichrist. Really? And the Reverend Tim Simpson, a Presbyterian minister who's president of the Christian Alliance for Progress, another liberal group, added, quote, so under the Christmas tree this year for little Johnny is this allegedly Christian video game teaching Johnny to hate and kill? End quote. Now, of course, as was pointed out by Clark Stevens of the Christian Progressive Group, players can choose to join the Antichrist team, but of course they can never win You know. Now, that team includes, let's see, it says here, fictional rock stars, folks with Muslim-sounding names, while the righteous team includes gospel singers, missionaries, healers, and medics. When asked about the Arab and Muslim-sounding names, Mr. Fritschner, the spokesman for this Left Behind Games, he's the president, the Left Behind Games, he said the games don't endorse prejudice, but, quote, Muslims are not believers in Jesus Christ and thus can't be on Christ's side in the game. That's so obvious, end quote. Mr. Fritschner said more than 10,000 retailers, including Sam's Club, Target, Best Buy, Circuit City, GameStop, EB Games, and various Christian stores offer the game. He said sales are terrific, though he wouldn't reveal figures. And here's the last on this. Plugged In, a publication of the conservative Christian group Focus on the Family, gave the game a thumbs up. The reviewer for Focus on the Family, who looked at this group, or looked at this game, where the little Game Boy can sit there and kill people who don't accept Jesus Christ as their Savior. In other words, kill Jews, kill Muslims. Although I doubt if they have anybody on this game that sounds, has a name like Rosenberg or Goldstein. Right? I'm sure all the names are like Muhammad on the bad guy's side, or Al-Amin. But the reviewer for the Christian group Focus on the Family's publication, Plugged In, gave it a thumbs up and said, quote, it's the kind of game that mom and dad can actually play with Junior and use to raise some interesting questions along the way, end quote. I'll fill in the blanks. What questions do you suppose Junior can ask mom and dad as they're all sitting there killing people with Muslim-sounding names? Die, you son of a bitch. Stuff like that, I guess. And people, you know, I'm sure Christians listening to this program right now will be offended when I use the word God damn or the word son of a bitch. It's very offensive, right, to hear that in your car radio or in your home radio, and yet these very same people will go buy Junior or Juniorette this game for Christmas here. Kill. Jesus wants all these people to either convert or die. Your choice, sonny. Ah, I'm going to be sick. Wait a minute, I am sick. and you know what is really weird? Kathy and I and Molly are still, in spite of all this, are still going to have our Christmas program next Thursday.
I got my plastic Jesus riding on the dashboard of my car. Through my trials and tribulations and my travels through the nations, with my plastic Jesus I'll go far.
Hey, neocons, don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's more Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. And from the another one of these sad stories from Colorado, another evangelical preacher, megachurch busted for gay sex. Married, grown children. These stories are so sad. The founding pastor of a second Colorado church has resigned over gay sex allegations just weeks after the Ted Haggard story or event. His name is Paul Barnes. He's a founding pastor of the several thousand member Grace Chapel in the Denver suburb of Englewood, Colorado. He told his evangelical congregation in a videotape message he had had sexual relations with other men and was stepping down. On the videotape, which the Denver Post was the Seattle Post Intelligencer was allowed to view. Mr. Barnes told church members, quote, "I have struggled with homosexuality since I was a five-year-old boy. I can't tell you the number of nights I have cried myself to sleep begging God to take this away," end quote. He's 54 years old. He and his wife have two adult children. The story is so sad. I mean, it's so sad. Here's a man who says that since he was 5 years old, he's struggled with just being himself. He struggled with his normal sexual orientation. Homosexuality is normal in the context of sexuality. In a statistical presentation, no, homosexuality is not normal because most people are not homosexual. But in the context of human sexuality, of course it is. I mean, how could it not be? You see? I mean, it's the argument that it's abnormal is insane, in addition to being screwy and wrong. But, just like poor Iraq, these poor evangelical preachers who have railed against homosexuality and gay marriage and gay stability and gay love. And there is no such thing as gay love. Love is love. Stability is stability. Marriage is marriage. Partnership is partnership. Who decided to break it down? Well, there's normal marriage and gay marriage. Huh? What are you talking about? But it's so sad. And so here goes another one. This guy says since he was 5 years old, he's now 54, for 49 years, he's been involved in this horrendous, it's a wonder he's not schizophrenic. Maybe he is. I don't know. But begging God to take away who he is. I will mock these people who spend their lifetimes demonizing or attempt to demonize other people because of the other person's sexual orientation, and then it turns out that they're sneaking off in the weeds on whenever they get a chance to do a little homosexual this and that themselves. But I can only feel sadness for people whose story is like this. Here's a guy for 49 years out of his 54 years. He's begged God to take this away as though something was on him. You know, a spider, a wart, a birthmark, an extra arm, you know. And all he was praying God to take away was who he is. And who's he praying to? I mean, can you imagine how screwed up this guy is? Can you imagine how screwed up he is? Sad. Oh, well. And those stories will never stop. They just go on and on and on. And I just wonder, what does that do? Well, I know the answer to my own question. I was going to say, what does it do to the evangelicals who follow these people, who buy into the argument? It's like Republicans that follow Bush and buy into the argument about Saddam Hussein or anything, because Bush lies about everything. And these evangelical preachers lie about everything. If their entire life is a lie, then everything they say is a lie. No. Think about it before you say, oh, my lawyer, crazier than hell. So I just wonder what the evangelicals who follow these people, when they find out that what these preachers have been preaching against since forever, and then they get caught and they confess. How sad. How just bloody sad. It really is. We were talking last week about Gordon Smith, the a senator from Oregon who has called the war possibly even criminal, and he can't support it anymore, Republican. And I got an email from Bridget who lives in Oregon. She writes, "If I didn't live in Oregon and hadn't watched Gordon Smith's perfectly positioned comments and speeches juxtaposed with his usually completely opposite boats, I might be a little more impressed with his comments. He managed to get elected as a, quote, moderate, close quote, Republican from a blue state, but has voted like the worst of the neocons. He's up for re-election in 2 years, and he's carrying the destruction of the Klamath Basin salmon runs as a yoke around his neck. a local issue. So he has to do something to give himself a different image. I hate to be so cynical, but if the Republicans were still in control, he would never have given that speech, and he'd vote for the war again in a heartbeat. Well, I'm glad for the clarification, because, you know, so many of these people, it's hard to know what the record is. When I talked about the story, as most people have, about Gordon Smith, the Republican senator from Oregon who came out against this war, I just thought, well, okay, another voice against the war. And the last one here of these little introductory stories that we do every night, David Stockman, remember him? If you're a certain age, you do. He was a former top budget official in the Reagan White House. Stockman was Reagan's budget director from 81 to 85, and he created a real firestorm during his time in the White House when he told an interviewer that he thought Reaganomics were what he called a Trojan horse for the rich. And he predicted huge budget deficits. And you know, he was right. He helped design and lay out the blueprints for economic policy that just cut the throats of so-called Reagan Democrats. This is another thing I can never understand. I can't understand why these evangelical preachers who are gay just don't accept themselves. But I could never understand how Reagan Democrats could be Reagan Democrats. Reagan set out to destroy the middle class, and he succeeded. He utterly no, there's still a middle class. But most of the people in the middle class, and maybe most is the wrong word, a huge percentage of the middle class are living on equity in their homes and so on and so forth. But it was Reagan's idea was to destroy unionized labor, very successful in that. And he had a lot of help from Bush 1 and Clinton. With NAFTA and GATT and all this other crap. But Stockman, David Stockman, he apologized for saying what he said after he was taken to the White House woodshed, so to speak. He was spanked. He apologized, and he kept his job until 1985. Then he resigned and wrote a book of scathing criticism of Reagan and his top aides, people like Michael Deaver and Lynn Nofziger and the rest of these monsters that started the process of... destruction that we're still dealing with today. But anyway, David Stockman is now under investigation. Federal investigators and prosecutors are preparing a case against him and other corporate officers for this company, Michigan-based Collins and Aikman Corporation. It's a auto parts company. And the investigation is focusing on whether Stockman and other corporate officers misled investors about the financial health of the company and yada, yada. He faces charges of security fraud, mail fraud, wire fraud, and on and on and on. So the reason that story caught my eye is because it's another one of the Reagan administration officials who winds up either indicted, imprisoned, threatened with such if they didn't get the hell out of Washington. The Reagan administration was the administration with the most, I mean, they are singular. The Reagan administration's members are singular in their corruption. I remember even during the 80s, there was a list put out by one of the, maybe it was a NATO organization, of all the Reagan appointees and members of the Reagan administration, big fish, little fish, red fish, blue fish, all the way up and down the line, who had either been indicted, accused of crimes. And one of them, their labor secretary, Donovan, was accused, indicted, tried, and found not guilty. Not innocent, found not guilty. But the other 99 million who were either accused, indicted, tried, convicted, or resigned in order to avoid prosecution. And the list was enormous. It was something like 300 or approaching 400. Big fish, little fish in the Reagan administration. Who were criminals, who were just absolutely, utterly corrupt. Now, you could make the argument that Reagan was suffering the early effects of Alzheimer's at that point and didn't know, or he didn't care, or that was the plan. I mean, pick one. It can only be one of three, right? He didn't know, he didn't care, or that was the plan. Oh, my God, another break? These never stop, do they? All right, when we come back, we're going to start. I want you to hear the sound we have tonight that... Kathy has found of Rumsfeld, Bush, and Tony Snow. So get the popcorn. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Mayor, born
illegal favors, so the Empire State to Japan. And Oliver North married William C. Corden, gave birth to a little Tehran. And the Ayatollah bought a nuclear warship if he dies and wants to go out in style. And there's nothing to eat that don't carry the stink of some waste dump in the Nile.
You're listening to Mike Malloy on the Nova M Radio Network.
Got the flying monkey right blues? Here's the cure, Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. The this is reported last week, just here and there. You had to really look to find it. The Iraq Study Group, when the report came out a week ago, it said that the Bush administration routinely underreported the level of violence in Iraq in order to disguise its own policy failings in that sad, dying country, murdered country. The Iraq Study Group called on the Pentagon and the director of U.S. intelligence community to immediately institute a new reporting system that provides what they call, quote, a more accurate picture of events on the ground, end quote. Now, I didn't hear Wolf Blitzer talk about that. I didn't hear Charlie, who are these guys on ABC? Since they've all died or retired and everything's shifted around, Brian Williams on NBC, and who's the one, Katie Couric on CBS, and you don't know, okay. But I didn't hear this talked about, did you? Did anybody? Now, what the Iraq Study Group says about how lies of omission, including lies of commission by this filthy Bush crime family, this filthy, disgusting regime that now runs this country, is just one more example of the disrespect that Bush and his thugs have for us, the American people, who are supporting this war financially to the tune now of $500 billion, who are supporting this war with the blood and guts and arms and legs and viscera of our men and women. And these evil sons of bitches in the White House are not even honest about the level of violence against Iraqis. Huh? Now, the allegations in this Iraq Study Group report date all the way back to Bush's contention before the invasion in March of 2003 that Saddam was hiding weapons. So every single thing has been a filthy lie. Why is this man, Bush, still in office? Why are people sitting around saying, well, okay, he came out today and said it's going to be after the first year before he has a report, so you all keep dying over there. You Americans keep having your heads blown off and your legs blown off and your arms blown off. Some of you, we've got the telegrams ready to go to your moms and dads. Or not telegrams, what the hell, I'm dating myself. We have the email messages, or we have the people in uniform and the priest and the rabbi and whoever who will show up on your wife's front porch and say, bad news, sweetheart. On page 94 of the Iraq Study Group's report, it says there had been, quote, significant underreporting of the violence in Iraq. The reason, the group said, was because the way the system was set up to keep track of violent acts, the way it was designed, was in a manner that minimized the deaths of Iraqis. The report said, quote, the standard for recording attacks acts as a filter to keep events out of reports and databases. A murder of an Iraqi is not necessarily counted as an attack. If we cannot determine the source of a sectarian attack, that assault does not make it into the database. A roadside bomb or a rocket or mortar attack that doesn't hurt U.S. personnel doesn't count. End quote. Now, obviously, by excluding all this data, Bush crime family officials were able to boast that deaths from violence in Baghdad had declined more than 52% between July and August, for example. That's just one example. So in addition to the war being based on horrendous, murderous lies, the reporting, while Hannity and the Pig Man and the rest of these right-wing thugs that infest talk radio have been screaming, you know, following the party line, well, nobody's reporting. Well, the mainstream media, national, the liberal media is not reporting the good stuff. Not only is there no good stuff to report, but filthy organizations like Fox News have been reporting, underreporting, even the violence. ABC, CBS, and NBC also. No, nobody has been telling the truth. Now, I guess somebody could make an argument that the truth was not available. And that is a lazy journalist's, and I wouldn't even call that person a journalist, answer. If ABC, CBS, and NBC, screw Fox. Fox is a nest of vipers and demons. But if CNN and MSNBC and the rest of these broadcast news outlets, if they are willing to do what they've done for 6 years of the Bush crime family, parrot what the Bush crime family tells them to parrot, and if most of the nation's newspapers have been doing the same, with a few exceptions, very few. In addition, the nation's newspapers, like, you know, the newspaper Record, the New York Times, and the Washington Post, have been suppressing stories, keeping them away from the American public. New York Times, I don't know about the Post because I don't subscribe to it, New York Times now is apologizing for suppressing stories. This is what you and I are up against. This is what the entire country is up against. Suppressing events is one thing. Lying about them is something else. Again, but using Orwellian newspeak to report events is off the chart. If an Iraqi is killed, it doesn't count as an act of violence. If a roadside bomb goes off and it doesn't injure or harm an American soldier, it's not counted as an act of violence. My God. I mean, this makes the lies told in the Vietnam era look like child's play. The only thing, or the major thing it was lied about in the Vietnam era, was the so-called body count. Remember that? The search and destroy missions would go out, and they'd come back at the end of the day for the 5 o'clock follies. And the various field commanders would say, well, we got 6. Another one would say, well, we got 9. And they'd add them all up. Well, we killed 314 NVA and 212 Viet Cong. So our total, yeah, right? But this is beyond belief. Hey, welcome back. 7 past the hour. We are going to play some of the sound for you now. I hope you had a chance to pop some popcorn and pour yourself some liquid refreshment, because some of this is really bizarre. Keeping in mind that the Iraq Study Group, in part of the report that has terribly underreported, is that they said that underreported also was the violence in Iraq, that this is a result of deliberate manipulation of the truth, once again, by the Bush crime family. Think about it in terms of lost human lives. How many Americans, young American young people, hesitated. Perhaps they were thinking about joining the military and hesitated because, well, you know, who wants to walk into a meat grinder? So the Bush crime family says acts of violence are down. So the young person weighs his or her chances. And, you know, most young people feel that they are immortal and that they will live forever and that there is something heroic, intrinsically heroic, about going off to slaughter, to kill or be killed, that is an heroic act. There's no more John Wayne. I don't know where that comes from anymore. An heroic act, in my opinion, is working for peace, is refusing, utterly and absolutely refusing, to take up arms against someone who has done nothing, a nation or a people or a religious group or an ethnic group that has done nothing to us. So think of the possibility, that's all. Maybe it was only one, maybe it was 1,000. How many American soldiers, young men and young women, who more or less flipped a coin in their minds and said, no, I don't think so, there's too much killing. And then when the Pentagon, the Bush crime family, says, acts of violence are way down, we are winning, everything's fine, and these young people say, well, you know, I am immortal, I'll live forever, I think I'll go. It'll be interesting, and when I come back, when I put on that Marine Corps uniform, I'll look cool. And when I come back and wear my fatigues, and if I have a combat medallion or a ribbon or what have you, I think, how many of those young people are now dead or are going to die? You see, this is the part when you kind of destructure it, take it apart, how horrifying are the results of the Bush crime family's lies. The Bush crime family's lies are responsible for every single American soldier that has died in Iraq and every single Iraqi that has died since the invasion in March of 2003. Clinton is responsible for all the deaths between Bush 1 and 2. But ever since the invasion, every single American family that is bleeding tonight because they lost a family member is bleeding because of Bush lies, and the lies continue. And now we find out that not only were the lies involving the war, the facts, quote, quote, involving the war were lies and misrepresented, but now we find out that even the reporting on the violence was lied about. This filthy Bush family has absolutely no limits beyond which they won't go to further their own objectives. Madness, power, money, wealth, whatever it is. I frankly think it's insanity. Jesus. So knowing that, I want you to listen now. Chuckle Nuts, yesterday, with the bionic vice president, this evil, filthy, disgusting Dick Cheney standing there, and the most ineffective Secretary of State in the history of this nation, Condoleezza Rice, silent, standing there, and Bush talking about his plans for Iraq. Here's Chuckle Nuts trying to appease the public, letting them know that, first of all, that the two thugs on his left and right are indeed still alive, and two, he has a plan for Iraq, because it's an important neighborhood.
I just had a briefing with my senior policy advisors here at the State Department. I want to thank you for your hospitality, Madam Secretary.
Oh, please.
We talked about a lot of things. We talked about what's taking place on the ground in Iraq. I appreciate the advice I got
about lunch
from those folks in the field. And that advice is an important part and an important component of putting together a new way forward in Iraq. Like most Americans, this administration wants to succeed in Iraq because we understand success in Iraq will help protect the United States in the long run.
From what?
We also talked about the neighborhood, the countries that surround Iraq, and the responsibilities that they have to help this young Iraqi democracy survive. I appreciate so very much the Iraqi leadership taking the lead in its neighborhood. After all, one of the things we're trying to do is help this government get on its feet so it can govern and it can conduct its own foreign policy. But the role of America is to help this young democracy survive.
So wait a minute. Is that the current mission then? Help this young democracy survive? He says, we also talked about the neighborhood, the countries that surround Iraq and the responsibilities they have. Wait a second. Hey, dumbass, the countries that surround Iraq? Oh, let's see, that would be Iran and Syria. And Jordan? And Saudi Arabia? And Turkey? But the two major components there are Iran and Syria. So what responsibilities do they have, Mr. Murderer? You won't even talk to them. For 50 years, we managed to talk with every single Soviet premier, even while they had every single American city over a population of 500,000 targeted with active nuclear destruction. He says, like most Americans, this administration wants to succeed in Iraq. This is so beyond belief. 70% of Americans now don't want success. They want out. Just get out. My God. Raisin Brain here completes his catapult of the propaganda, as he put it one time, with this rhetoric about the way forward and achieving the objective in that country, and he calls it success, whatever that means. He vomits up so much jingoistic propaganda, it's hard, if not impossible, to cobble together a speech from little one-sentence slogans. But listen, see how many one-sentence slogans you can hear in the next 58 seconds as Bush presses on.
I'm looking forward to continuing my deliberations with the military. There's no question we got to make sure that the State Department and Defense Department are the efforts and their recommendations are closely coordinated, so that when I do speak to the American people, they will know that I've listened to all aspects of government and that the way forward is a way forward to achieve our objective, to succeed in Iraq. And success is a country that governs, defends itself, that is a free society, that serves as an ally in this war on terror. This is really the calling of our time, that is to defeat these extremists and radicals. And Iraq is a component part, an important part, of laying the foundation for peace. And so, Madam Secretary, thank you for the briefing. I want to thank your team here in Washington for their good work, and I thank those out in the field who have shown such incredible bravery to do the hard work necessary to secure our country. Thank you all.
Madam Secretary? When did he start calling Condi? He said that whenever someone accuses him of being a racist, he points to Condi. Madam Secretary, thank you for the briefing. I want to thank your team here in Washington for their good work, and thank those out in the field. In the field? No, dumbass. They're in an abattoir, a slaughterhouse.
He usually calls her Mistress Condi, but that's only when she has on the spiky Ferragamos.
And he says, I thank all those out in the field who have shown such incredible bravery to do the hard work necessary to secure our country. What the hell is he talking about? Oh, my God.
You're fighting out there this winter's morning, yeah. Maybe it's always time for another Christmas song. Chestnuts roasting on an open fire.
I know there's a lot of speculation that these reports in Washington mean there's going to be some kind of graceful exit out of Iraq. We're going to stay in Iraq to get the job done.
Being sung by choir and
folks dressed up like Eskimos. Everybody knows a turkey and some mistletoe.
21 past the hour. Now let's move over to Rumsfeldt in his Pentagon town hall meeting before heading off to the Home for Aged Mass Killers, whose most recent member descended over the weekend into hell, Augusto Pinochet. Very interesting. Ariel Dorfman in today's New York Times has an op-ed piece about the death of Pinochet. You ought to read it. There's a farewell parade for Rummy scheduled for this Friday, the 15th. Really? Is that right, Kathy? By whom? Where? Do you know?
It would go to defenselink.mil. It's, you know, the military Pentagon
right.
website, and it's all there. It's a big color guard parade or something for...
Oh, my God.
I know.
I guess he's going to parade in front of the so-called Army of One, since all the other troops have been sent to Iraq and Afghanistan, unless he, I don't know, unless he goes there again. And I've heard they're making sure the color guard all have meticulously clean uniforms, polished weapons, and lots of blanks for the occasion. What a time for a fragging, huh? Anyway, this audio is from last Friday, his last official appearance as Bush's Secretary of Death. Let's call this clip Remembrance of Things Bloody.
When I think about these past years, there are a number of moments that stand out. I think of those proud Afghan girls that were sitting in the front row at President Karzai's inauguration in Kabul when he became president, the first president elected by the people in the 5,000-year history of that country.
They're all dead now.
I think of the Iraqis who, through it all, believe that their future is bright and who are working to forge something that they've never had before, a free country, a representative country.
Oh, my God.
And I do, as Pete Pace suggested, I remember being stunned by the news of the abuse at Abu Ghraib. And then watching so many determined people spend so many months trying to figure out exactly how in the world something like that could have happened.
Because you ordered it.
Right. And then seeing how the department eventually demonstrated to the world how our democracy deals openly and decisively with such egregious wrongdoing.
Oh, my God.
And yes, I remember the irresponsible comments by some who try to sully the image of the courageous and dedicated men and women in uniform who keep the American people safe.
This is sick. Do you see what I mean? This is sick. Those proud Afghan girls that props for you and your sick president that were sitting in the front row at Karzai's inauguration are now dead. They have been raped and murdered by Taliban operatives because they dared to go to school, you sick bastard. And he says, I remember being stunned by the news of the abuse at Abu Ghraib. Stunned. He was stunned that the news got out since he authorized the torture. And this evil, old, filthy, filthy murderer can sit there and say he remembers being stunned by the news of abuse when he ordered it. At least other tyrants were honest in their madness, in their murderous attitude. This evil son of a bitch is such a liar. He said, then I was watching so many determined people spend so many months trying to figure out exactly how in the world something that could have happened. All they had to have done was come to you, you killer, you psychopath, and asked you, and had you told the truth. You would, oh, yeah, I'll tell you exactly how it happened. I ordered it. And then he says he remembers irresponsible comments by some who? Combat veterans like John Kerry or Jack Murtha? Who really want to keep the troops home or safe? And mainly that means keep them home, where they belong. Irresponsible comments by some who tried to sully the image of the courageous and dedicated men and women in uniform who keep the American people safe. Safe from what? You son of a bitch. Keep us safe from you and Rice and Cheney and Bush. That's what our military should be doing. Keeping us safe from you and the rest of your operatives who have destroyed the Constitution, who lock people up now with no charge, who rendition people, who torture. But he stands there. This sick, murderous man stands there. This American stands there and says this kind of stuff. And there's more. Stay with us.
And I read the front page, but I'm the decider, and I decide what is best, and what's best is for Don Rumsfeld to remain as the Secretary of Defense.
Well, then, who decided to let him go? Must be the spooks, huh? Or those strange people that live inside your throat.
Sorry, Mrs. Torrance. Rummy isn't here anymore, Mrs. Torrance.
Red Rum! Red Rum!
In this next clip, a verklempt von Rumskull demonstrates just the kind of Bush crime family-style delusion that caused Pappy Bush to step in and send in his old team of sucked dry killers to try to clean up the mess caused by his degenerate son. Listen to Rumsfeldatu describe his deadly decisions in Iraq and Afghanistan as accomplishments.
I wish I could say that everything we've done here is going perfectly, but that's not how life works. When thousands of people make dozens of difficult decisions on hundreds of pressing issues, for the most part, matters that are new and unfamiliar, where there's no roadmap, no guidebook that says here's exactly how you should do something. The hope has to be not perfection, but that most decisions with the perspective of time will turn out to be the right ones, and that the perspective of history will judge the overwhelming majority of those decisions favorably.
Oh, my God.
When we reflect back on these past years, each of you and the future generations of Americans and as well as future generations of Iraqis and Afghans, will be able to look back on these past years as a time of enormous challenge, of historic consequence, and of solid accomplishment.
I thought Afghans was, Afghan is their money. I think the people are called Afghani, aren't they? Have I got that wrong? He says, I wish I could say that everything we've done here has gone perfectly, but that's not how life works. Will you condescending, patronizing bastard? You and Cheney and Bush sent our young people to kill and die for no damned reason? And you're going to tell us that's why, or that's what didn't go perfectly? You lying, murderous old thug? And he's whining about no roadmap, no guidebook. Are you out of your freaking mind? More has been written about the consequences and the circumstances of war and conflict than any other subject in the history of the human race, as long and bloody and murderous as it's been. And you say there's no guidebook? Then why, if there is no guidebook, did you send so many people to die? If 8,000 years of recorded history has not been enough for you, you old bastard, shouldn't you have developed a guidebook first before sending people to die? Delusion. Madness. And he's going to get off. He's going to get away with it. No one is going to bring this killer to trial. No one.
If in a fit of rage I run out into the middle of the street in downtown Atlanta, Georgia tomorrow, and grab the first person I find and say, are you a Republican? Do you support Bush? And they say yes, and I slaughter that person on the spot, I'll probably go to jail for, I don't know, 10, 12 years for second-degree murder, unless I have a good lawyer who can get me off on an insanity plea. But Rumsfeld, who's responsible for hundreds of thousands of premeditated deaths, including nearly 3,000 of our own people, and this miserable bastard is talking about how history is going to judge him favorably? Oh, my God. Generations of Americans will be able to look back on these past years, he says, as a time of enormous challenge, of historic consequence, of solid accomplishment? Well, good golly, my goodness, yes siree. That's true if by solid accomplishment you mean death and carnage and hatred of America and destruction and turning the Middle East into a slaughterhouse, ready to go up any second. If that is your definition, you murderous freak, yeah, yeah, then that's your solid accomplishment. Incredible, incredible. Do you understand what you're hearing, Truth Seeker? And you right-wing pissants who gather around and monitor the program, do you understand what you're hearing here? Is it sinking in how insane these people are? All of them? No. Not insane like, oh, damn, he's insane. No, no. Clinically? Definably, chartably mad. And they're taking the whole country into, have taken the whole country into this insanity. To the point where we have games being sold where Christians are slaughtering people on video games to satisfy their hungry bloodlust messiah. And Islam is a bloody religion? Oh my God. For his final answer to a final question of this god-awful, filthy, blood-soaked, miserable failure of a career, Rumsfeld answers a Pentagon employee who has a question about his plan to transform the military. The question was, Mr. Secretary, with respect to your second tour of duty here in the Puzzle Palace, little inside joke there. What are some of the things that you wish you could have accomplished? Like, oh, I don't know, transformation items that you didn't get a chance to get to this time?
You know, when you think about words, I have felt just an enormous sense of urgency. We're being challenged asymmetrically by irregular warfare, by people who operate totally differently than the way people operated in World War II.
Oh, really?
And that is a challenge. It's a task. And it's still not well understood in our country. It's unfamiliar. But I think the major sign of progress is the fact that the senior people in this department today are overwhelmingly people who understand that.
Understand
and,
what?
And who are attracting people in their activities who also understand it. And that energy and that impetus will give the prospects of continuing a transforming process, is a better word than transformation, I suppose. Transformation leads you to believe you started untransformed and suddenly you're transformed, which isn't the case because the world's not static. It's dynamic. It's changing. And we need to continue to transform as we go along.
What the hell is he saying? These are the ramblings of a madman. This is insanity. Play this soundbite for just your average run-of-the-mill mental health therapist. You know, somebody with an MSW. and they'll listen to this, and if they don't know who it is, they'll say, well, this person is sick. Sick! He says we're being challenged asymmetrically by irregular warfare, by people who operate totally differently than the way people operate in World War II. That was 60 years ago. Jesus God! The way they're operating now, you crazy old bastard, is the way they operated 2,000 years ago. The weaponry is different, but when you have an invading force, my God! Every military historian going back to the ancient Chinese have written about these kinds of tactics. How to handle an invading force. Bring them in deeper, 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 and then kill them all! And Rumsfeld doesn't know anything about this, and he's the Secretary of Defense. Transforming process is a better word than transformation, I suppose. Transformation leads to believe you started untransformed, then suddenly you're transformed, which isn't the case because the world's not static. It's dynamic, it's changing, and we need to continue to transform as we go along. And if I don't soon get more cheese, the roof is going to fall in, and I know I'm going to be eating a leg because the tiles are moving! And the snakes are all around me! Oh, Christ! This is Rumsfeld. Do you understand, truth seeker, what you are listening to? Still answering the question about his idea of transformation, Rummy's ramblings get stranger and stranger and stranger. This is Rumsfeld at the height of his podium-pounding psychosis. What a fitting end to an insane career. Listen as he talks about how our military can't lose, but can't win. And the maimed soldiers at Water Reed want to keep doing it in Iraq until we get it done. Ha, ha, ha.
I mean, just take Iraq or Afghanistan. The military can't lose. They can't lose a battle, let alone a war over there. But they also can't win, because it is not a conventional conflict. There isn't an army, a navy, or an air force to go defeat.
Madness.
It takes political and economic activity.
Madness.
And you need that three-legged stool. And we have to understand that as a society, as a people, and not be impatient. And I'll tell you, the people over there in uniform get it. They really do. I was in Walter Reed the other day, and a fellow just come in with multiple wounds, and he was on his back, and he had a tube in his nose, and he looked up and he said, "If only the American people will give us the time, we can do this. We're getting it done."
Oh, Jesus.
And it's a fact. It will take patience, and it will take understanding.
Oh, my God.
And yet it takes that sense of urgency on the part of the people here, as we know, because we have such an important responsibility.
Do you have any doubt that Rumsfeld is insane? He talked with someone with multiple wounds on his back, with a tube in his nose. And if only, thump, the American people, thump, will give us the time, thump. We can do this. Thump. We're getting it done. Thump. Over there. Thump. 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 Thump.
This is Mike Malloy on the Nova M Radio Network.
Well,
The second pillar of peace and security in our world is the willingness of free nations to retain aggression and evil by force.
Jesus Christ. They're all insane. I mean, really, it's not Mike Malloy sitting behind his little toy microphone saying, they're all crazy. No. It's moi and you and the rest of the world knowing that these people are mad. This is pure insanity. The next question that is asked of this lunatic, Rumsfeld, is about how we battled the media war in Iraq. Given all the bad news that's reported about Iraq, what good news is there to report? But Rummy answers that one for us. He had to buy the good news in Iraq. Remember that one? The if you can't buy them, kill them strategy for news reporters in Iraq. Remember? And now the Iraq Study Group says that the truth was underreported, the bad news, everything was skewed and scammed and lied about. So the person in the audience at the Pentagon says, I'd like to ask your thoughts on strategic communication. We're fighting an enemy that is using the media as a weapon and doing it very well. We're losing the war on that front, in my opinion, sir. Can you give us your thoughts on how we might better attack that problem?
I mean, if you just watched what's happening every time there's a bomb going off in Baghdad, you'd think the whole country's aflame. You fly over it, and that's just simply not the case.
Oh, my God.
There are people out in the fields working, and there's cars in the gas lines waiting to get fuel.
Well, that sounds good.
Casey decided he wanted people to know that, and the truth, mind you. So he said, let's get that in the local papers. The first thing that happened is they did that. They gave some people some money and said, get this, in these true facts about hospitals and schools and goodness knows what else. Get them in the local papers. And by golly, there'll be a more positive feeling if people are aware of that, because the lies from the enemy go on day after day after day. He did it, and of course there was just a big outcry here in the United States, in the Congress, in the press. Oh my goodness, isn't that terrible? He's trying to reduce the number of people getting killed over there by asking people to print the truth and paying them to do that.
Oh, my God. Do you understand what you are hearing? Do you? I mean, if you just watch what's happening every time there's a bomb going off in Baghdad and you think the whole country's aflame. It is, you dumb bastard. It is! But you fly over it, and that's simply not the case. You don't see fires. It doesn't look like hell. There are no open pits burning. There are no forests on fire. There are no cities ablaze. There's not a huge Satan sitting on a pile of skulls. And yet that's the way it's being reported in America. This is madness. So we said, let's get the good stuff in the paper. So the first thing that happened, we gave people some money and said, get this, these true facts in the local papers. And by golly, there will be a more positive feeling. My goodness, the outcry here in the United States when they found out about it, isn't that terrible? Paying people to print lies and killing the reporters who actually print the truth. Do you understand what you are hearing, Truth Seeker, as you listen to this tonight? Do you understand that this man is insane? And that because of his insanity and Bush and Cheney and the kind of ditzy wandering around bumping into stuff, Condoleezza Rice, that 3,000 Americans have died in combat and tens of thousands of Iraqis have been butchered and blown into red mist, and these evil people are still bouncing around talking about, well, you'd think the country was in flames! And it's not! I know flames when I see them! I fly over Iraq. I don't see flames. I don't see corpses. I don't see beheadings and bombs going off. No, I don't see it. I see spiders and snakes and liberals and Democrats and liars. Liars. Liars!
You're listening to Mike Malloy on the Nova M Radio Network.
Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. We have one more soundbite from Donald Rumsfeld. And I apologize for the lack of phone calls on the program so far tonight. But as soon as we finish this up, and then two from Tony Snow, we shall come to your calls. Jesus, I sounded like Rumsfeld there. Finally, the last Q&A from Rummy, I guess forever, at least for the next 100 years, until he's reanimated, brought out of his tomb to fight the intergalactic robot wars that came as a result of President Bush, the 152nd's terrible attitude toward extraterrestrials. Pentagon staffer says, and can't you just see the brown marks around this guy's mouth? Good morning, sir. I have two questions for you. The first, if terrorism is the greatest threat against America today, what, in your opinion, is the second and third greatest threat? And also, what was your greatest day or most satisfying day while in office? And the opposite, what was your worst? Oh, and third, if you were a tree, would you be a poplar or a weeping willow?
I would not agree with the premise of your question in this sense. I don't think terrorism is the greatest threat. I think that terrorism is a weapon of choice for violent extremists. That's the threat.
Oh, okay!
And it can be manifested in a variety of ways. At the present time, we've used the phrase a global war against terror, which I find not perfect.
Uh-huh.
I think that it is really a long struggle. It is irregular, it's asymmetric, and it is not against terrorism per se. It is against these violent extremists who use terrorism, but they also could use other things. Of course, the purpose of terrorism is to terrorize. It's not to kill people. Uh-huh. It's to alter people's behavior.
Oh.
And you can do that using a variety of different techniques.
Oh.
The worst day was Abu Ghraib, and seeing that what went on there and feeling so deeply sorry that happened.
Oh,
and,
my God.
I guess my best day, I don't know, may be a week from Monday.
Oh, excuse me. I'm not supposed to laugh. That was the insiders inside the death chamber, the Pentagon, laughing. That's his last day? Yeah, next Monday might be my best day too, you murderous bastard. Certainly a better day for every American and Iraqi and Afghan and well, everybody.
Even some little child living in a poverty-stricken dung heap in pick a country. It'll probably be a better day for him, too, because you'll be gone. Again.
Clearly, the worst day was Abu Ghraib, and seeing what went on there, and feeling so deeply, oh my God.
Do you have any doubt? You know, madness, when it's packaged to be presented as rationality, neither Bush, well, Bush talks about voices that tell him to invade countries. That is insanity in its most clearly identified form, I think, other than behavioral things like ripping one's eyes out or putting the baby in a microwave because it's infected with a devil. But having God tell you to invade countries and kill people, that is a classic, is it not, sign of utter madness. But with Rumsfeld and Cheney and some of these other sick bastards, the packaging their craziness in this cloak of rationality where you sit and listen to them, and the sentences, although they are gibberish and they are the words and strung together thoughts and phrases of someone who is insane, for the most part, with Rumsfeld, the grammar is correct. The structure is there. You can diagram his sentences where you can't Bush's. But oh my God, what he is saying! Do you hear it? Now, very quickly, moving from the delusional to the ridiculous. Just one? Okay, just one from Tony Snow, the voice of Fox News Network. In this, we move from the delusional to the asinine. Tony Snow got in front of the cameras today to explain that Monkey Man won't announce the way forward in Iraq until next year. He wants more death. So a reporter asked this about the delay. Tony, did the military leaders encourage him to take just a little bit more time? Will he talk about the way forward before the State of the Union speech?
No. The president is the commander-in-chief. He issues orders. It is, like, he decided that, frankly, it's not ready yet.
When did he decide that?
Well, he let us know today. So I don't know exactly when he decided, but you know, obviously, this is something that he places a premium on getting done quickly, but also getting done well. And as I've said before, the job's got to be done right. This is not one where you have an expiration date and if your homework's complete or not, you turn it in. He wants everybody to complete
it. Urgency here? We've talked about.
Well, the urgency. And as I said, there's urgency, but not panic. And I don't want to tell you it's not going to happen before State of the Union. I just don't want to lock in. I don't want people to have expectations on a specific date because we don't have it for you yet.
Can we talk?
Huh?
Is it definitely going to be in January?
Well, as far as we know. Well, when we have a date for you, we'll let you know.
You evil son of a bitch. You stand up there and laugh. And these half-witted reporters, these questions. The president is the commander-in-chief, Snow says. He issues orders. He decided, frankly, that his little speech is not ready. See, he's the decider, and he decided he wanted time to enjoy his new PlayStation 3 and not worry about blowing up real people over Christmas. No! With his new video game, he can blow up the Muslims and the Jews and anyone else who won't convert. When did he decide that he won't give his speech until January? Why does that matter, Miss Reporter? Why does that matter worth a damn? Why are you asking that question? Who cares? When did he decide that?
since last Wednesday. How's that?
As Tony Snow says, he places a premium on getting the job done quickly, but also getting it done well. And as I've said before, the job has got to be done right. What? The job, as you put it, you murderous son of a bitch, you enabler, the job that has resulted in 3,000 American families having a military officer and somebody from the chaplain's office standing on their front porch saying, "Your son is dead! Your father won't be coming home, little boy!" The job, as you put it, has been done wrong from day one.
Oh, God!
Classifying facts, exposing secret agent tax, the poor, the wealthy, leaving all the poor behind. I am the egghead. I'm the commander. I'm the
I'm the decider, and I decide what is best, and what's best is for Don Rumsfeld to remain as the Secretary of Defense.
Sitting in a White House garden, talking to the Lord. But my thoughts would be busy, busy hatching if I only had a brain. I am the egghead. I'm the commander.
This is Mike Malloy on the Nova M Radio Network.
Bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 21 past the hour. All right. Let's take some of the phone calls now. People have been holding on forever. Let's start with Mickey in Dahlonega, Georgia. Hey, Mickey.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
I was really just incensed this weekend. And I was reading about this UN vote. Did you read about they were voting on trying to limit arms trade in the world?
Mm-hmm.
And, well, you know, it was an overwhelming, you know, landslide vote, you know, 153-1. And you know who that one was.
Well, it's the business of America to provide weaponry to the rest of the world. We're in the killing business. This is the United States. And our purpose right now is to provide death for the rest of the world.
And nobody reports these things. Nobody reports that we voted against the fifth ban treaty, which could have, which Iran would have agreed to. Nobody reports that we rescinded the space arms treaty, that we want to start building weapons in space. Nobody reports these things.
Why do you suppose that that's the case?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious, but it just makes me angry. I mean, it's obvious that they don't want people to know what their country is doing. I mean, everyone thinks we're Team America going around catching all the bad guys and, you know, G.I. Joe. And, you know, everyone's just cheering us on, throwing flowers at our feet. That's the whole myth that, you know, Rumsfeld tried to sell. But Cheney and Bush and all those other criminals, I mean, it's just it goes on and on and on.
I wasn't aware of this vote, so I guess I'm like most of us, and I'm glad you have reported it. But I'm like most folks who listen to this program. That there's only so many hours in the day to do independent research, and I rely on some sort of media somewhere, somehow, to please keep me informed. I need to know things. You know, my life is at stake. My nation is at stake. My children's lives are at stake. And as you point out, I can't get the information. I guess I could if I would dig.
or listen. You got it somehow.
Well, you're only one person. I mean, it's so hard because they're trying to keep it from you. I mean, there are people who are trying to keep it out of the news. And, I read this story, and I was like, no, that's a big charge. That's a huge charge. You know, I read it at that Information Clearinghouse.info.
Right. That's a good website.
And then I was like, well, I got to verify this. And so I went to the UN website, and I traveled around, looked around, tried to find voting history.
Mm-hmm.
And there it was. One voted against, and then parentheses, United States, and I was about to pull my hair out of my head.
Well, I hear you, Mickey. I hear you. All right, listen, thanks, pal. Thanks for.
All right, thank you too.
Thanks for checking in. Take care.
All right, take care.
Bruce is calling from California. Bruce, welcome to the program. Thanks for your patience.
Buenas noches, Miguel.
Back at you.
Hey, this is probably one of those calls that you hate, but I just had to say that your rant about Vietnam and about the lies in the first hour just blew me away. It just made me realize the reason that I listened to you, and I don't think I've missed a program in 2 years or 3 years. I mean,
wow, thank you.
Really, honestly, if I don't catch it live, I download it and listen to it.
Right.
And it just blew me away. And you know, that's the only thing I call to say is just keep on with what you're doing. We need you out there.
Well, I appreciate it. That I get uncomfortable with talk like that. But no, I understand what you're saying. I understand, and I do appreciate it. It's very kind of you to say that.
Yeah. All right. Good night.
All right, Bruce. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot. Tom is calling from Indiana. Tom, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, sir. How are you?
I'm fine. I posted something on the website under the liberal media section. During the break, the radio program had a news item about Bush going to announce his new strategy for Iraq next year, and you talked about it.
Yeah. Can you hold a second?
Sure.
All right. Let me just put you on hold for a second, Tom. We got to do this break. And by the way, as we go into the break, we have three open lines here, and we're just going to do phone calls the rest of the program. So come on, 800-989-1480. I'm Mike Malloy.
She came riding side saddle, shouting out orders, twirling two pistols remarkably well. When it was over, there's nothing left standing, nothing moving, nothing to say. They drove the prisoners east to the boats for their hanging from the gallows overlooking Guantanamo Bay.
It's about 26 before the hour. Marge is calling from Indiana. Oh, I'm sorry. Back to Tom. We were talking with Tom. I'm sorry, Tom. My bad.
Oh, that's okay. I'd like to say hi to Kathy and hi to Marge.
Okay. Well, they both just got your message.
Okay. Well, I just thought it'd be an interesting challenge to the truth seekers, both those who participate on the board and those who are listening. Just to say, since Bush is going to announce his new Christmas, well, I guess he wanted to wrap his new stay the course Iraq policy for Christmas, but he couldn't get the septic tank wrapped fast enough. I just think it'd be interesting to see if people can figure out what his new stated policy is going to be before he announces it by listening to all the liberal media, you know,
right.
The Hannitys, the Limbaughs, the belts of the Beltway. I mean, they're all part of the liberal media.
Yes, they are indeed.
And I just think it'd be interesting if we could figure out what he's going to announce. Of course, people also have to realize that what he's going to announce is not going to be the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody's already figured out we didn't go under Iraq for the weapons of mass destruction. and we're not necessarily there to bring democracy to the Iraqi people.
Mm-hmm.
The reason we're in Iraq is to stay in Iraq.
Yeah.
The only, and now that there's been a change of course by the voters by putting Democrats in charge of some of the government, the only way we can stay in Iraq is if Bush and his corporate crime family goes into another country that makes our, which makes it necessary for us to have a tactical military presence in Iraq.
So you're looking for another invasion.
I would bet on it.
Yeah.
Because desperate people will do desperate things. And now that he doesn't have all the conservatives for smaller government and fiscal responsibility, now that he don't have that backing up all the time, he's going to have to do something desperate to keep our military presence in Iraq. And
but
that can only be another military action.
Well, unless he, let me just toss this into the mix of what you're saying. Unless he truly seizes complete dictatorial powers, he's got to have, I mean, he only has, whatever the War Powers Act, 90 days. He can commit troops anywhere he wants to. But at the end of 90 days or less, he's got to get authority from Congress. Not a declaration of war, but authority to continue, which is usually, as cheesy as it sounds, Congress agreeing to fund it. I don't think this new Congress or the American people will stand for the invasion of another country. This son of a bitch has already invaded two, both of which are turning into meat grinders that neither experience is accomplishing anything. So had Bush kept a Republican House and Senate, then I would say, you know, Tom is absolutely on the money. But I hope you're wrong is what I'm saying. I'm not saying I disagree with you. I'm just tossing this out as what a rational person, I think. Oh, what am I saying? Might offer to Bush. He can't do it. You can't. The only way he was able to invade to other countries is he did have, based on lies of the most hideous, he had the support of the American public.
But, he doesn't need to necessarily invade another country. He only needs to tactically bomb another country to make it military necessary for us to stay in Iraq.
That an invasion? When you bomb another country?
It's a difference in deployment. You can easily bomb another country more than you can deploy troops into another country.
Well, that's very true, but
if he makes tactical bombing on another country, Iran, Syria, more likely Iran, then it will be imperative for us to keep a military presence in Iraq, which is the basis of our going into Iraq. We're not there to do anything but to stay there. But that is my understanding of the real Bush policy.
Well, I don't fundamentally disagree with anything you're saying. All I'm saying, because these people will do anything, you're absolutely right. All I'm saying is, in response to your scenario, is that I honestly believe at this point it's an either-or situation. Either George W. Bush actually seizes total dictatorial power, or he stops where he is. I think, if I had to guess, I think his new course in Iraq is going to be stay the course. It's going to be rhetorical nonsense. They're already talking about an extra 40,000 troops going into Iraq, even though the two commanders on the ground, the two top commanders on the ground in Iraq, Abizaid and the other one, are saying no. Now, when you have commanders on the ground,
disagreeing with the commander-in-chief, you got the potential for a very serious problem. No matter what the disagreement is, MacArthur famously disagreed with Truman and got fired. We've had a couple of generals disagree with Bush in terms of strategies and were forced to take early retirement. Now, Abizaid and this other guy, I'm drawing a blank on his name, are saying we don't need 40,000 troops. Bush is listening once again to the voices in his head telling him, well, if we just had 40,000 more troops for a surge of military action against the insurgents, then that would give a breathing room for the Iraqi military and the Iraqi police force, and that's not going to happen. So I've got to respectfully disagree with you. I just can't see Tom Bush doing this. I can't, and I hope that the scenario you're laying out is wrong, because that may cause some real serious problems in this country. But anyway, thanks, Tom. Let me move on. I appreciate what you offer there, because it certainly is food for thought, okay?
Thank you very much.
All right. All right, Tom. Take care. Jesus, I hope he's wrong. God, I hope he's wrong, Tom. That this is not what's... No. All right, let's go to Marge now. Marge is calling also from Indiana. Hey, Marge.
Hi there. I hope he's wrong, too. You know, the other day, thankfully they didn't turn their microphones on, but it was the scariest damn sight in the world where Bush, Cheney, and Condoleezza Rice came out and was standing before the microphones, and I don't even remember what the deal was, but I thought, oh, my God, these people.
Yeah, we had some sound from that tonight. But I know you don't have a computer to listen in.
No, if I had a computer to listen in, I would do something a little bit more lighthearted.
Like?
I would direct my fellow truth seekers to a website called YouTube.com. YouTube.com.
Yeah, right.
And then type in Five Naked Ladies. It's kind of an unusual new... Christmas Carol, created by the cartoonist that makes Mr. Boffo and Willie Niffle.
Neither of which I'm familiar with.
Didn't you ever read them when you were in Chicago?
I may.
They're
have.
Single panel cartoons.
Oh, Mr. Okay, I think Mr. Boffo I did. Now, what is it? YouTube. Everybody's familiar with YouTube. Where at when they get there?
Five Naked Ladies.
Five Naked Ladies.
Yeah.
Okay. And this is a porn site, obviously.
No.
Oh, no. Okay.
It's a new Christmas carol.
Oh, it's a Christmas.
That he wrote.
Okay.
I think his name is Joe Martin, the one that created Mr. Boffo.
Oh, okay.
It was a hot summer day, and he was, I think the title is officially My Dream of Christmas.
Uh-huh.
And he wrote this little ditty that, well... On a cold winter night, you know, when, by the way, the last time I talked to you, it was colder than, right around here.
It
you know
was.
What temperature is tonight?
I don't.
Damn close to 50. Would you believe that? Crazy weather in Chicago.
It's called global climate change.
Oh, yeah. Where's Al Gore when you really need him?
And
listen, the reason I called.
Yes.
You know, you're talking about the people that are going away, and I was thinking about the ones that signed on for the job for the next go-around.
Yeah.
You see our friend Dennis Kucinich declared officially?
I did. Do you think that is it's a wasted effort? What do you think of Kucinich running for president again?
Well, I'm truly hoping that he will throw some ideas into the mix that will cause people to pay attention. Maybe this time he'll get a little bit more attention. I don't know. He didn't manage that the last time, but maybe they'll... he'll at least get a few more people to listen, and guess who else?
Who else?
Said he's running today, not for president, but he's running again today.
Who?
Our favorite mayor.
Daley?
Yeah.
Oh my God! Hey, hold on a second, Marge. Let me take a break, and we'll come back, and I can give you another minute or two because I know you're holding a long time. Just did we lose her? Oh God, we lost her. All right, stick around, Truth Seekers. We'll be right back.
Mike Malloy, on the Nova M Radio Network.
Ten before the hour, I think I disconnected Marge, damn. Anyway, thanks to the usual crew of miscreants and reprobates and liberals who help provide this program every evening. Ian Huff, engineered in Phoenix and answered your calls. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, Mark Marshall, and the militant moderators at MikeMulloy.com. Thanks to them. Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, archives the program. Catherine Bay is our executive producer. Yeah, we lost Marge. Oh, man, next time she calls in, Ian, if you're listening, next time Marge calls in, tell her I'm sorry I hit the wrong button. Let's go to Ray in Fremont, California. Hey, Ray.
Yes. Obviously, shift gears a little bit. I tend to agree. First of all, I admire your ability to dramatize the situation, the gravity of the situation, the way you describe things. I think it's excellent. But I want to shift gears. I saw something the other night on YouTube.com also. This was put on in February 20th, 2006. It is a National Press Club meeting from May 9th, 2001, of about, seems like, 8 or 10 witnesses of extreme credible, you know, there were high 35-year veterans in the Air Force and on, regarding UFOs. And they are a fact, and these people, they at the end of the thing, they were saying that there were 400 witnesses willing to testify in Congress. As a matter of fact, that is... It's called the Disclosure Project, .org. DisclosureProject.org is where it all comes from.
Uh-huh.
They want to testify in front of Congress that they have witnessed picking up and disposing of alien beings, crash landings. One guy described an installation on the dark side of the moon. And these guys are all straight-faced. I mean, these are high echelon people. But they're... The goal is for national security, because on a number of occasions the alien ships have hovered over defense installations, missile installations, and the missiles wouldn't work. Now, these are not a bunch of yahoos here. Hello?
Yeah, no, I'm listening. I'm listening.
So it's like a 115-minute video. It's quite long. But I guarantee you, you give it 10 minutes, you won't shut it off.
Well, let me say something here, Ray. You know, I've had a longstanding belief that the best thing that could happen to the human race would be to be visited by people, creatures, beings, thought processes from either a different star system, a different planet system, or a different dimension. Because that would focus the minds of humans on this planet as to the idiocy of what we're doing, and the fact that we're being visited by people who either see us as dinner or see us as maybe wanting to talk and do business.
It appears that they want to disable the nuclear weapons.
Well, maybe so. But having said that, having been kind of a fan of UFOs for years and years and years. I remember as a kid, as a 20-something, a 30-something, a 40-something, always kind of open to the idea, always kind of like, yeah, I know about Project Blue Book. Yeah, I know about this. Yeah, I know about that. But I kind of gave it up. And I just figure, look, there are very clear, distinct, simple ways, I think, I may be wrong, to contact Earthlings. And showing up in the middle of the night over some car traveling the Arizona desert is not the way to do it. And or hovering over a missile silo is not the way to do it. The shock value to the human race, and surely people who have developed interplanetary or intergalactic, I should say, space travel, would understand that, the quickest way to get the attention of the human species, if that's what they wanted, would be to just, by God, show up at high noon in the middle of New York or Moscow or Beijing and say, okay, look, we're here. You know, no trickery, no turning off grandma's ignition key, no sucking people up to have their body orifices probed.
Right.
Just arrive and say, here we are, or the, you know, the space equivalent of that. So.
Right. I tend to agree.
All right,
however,
having said that, here's my bottom line.
Okay.
I kind of, right now, just reject all of it. There's not other life forms in the universe. Of course there is. Or of course there are. But the fact of our being stalked and spied upon and things zipping through our night sky, I can't get to it. And I listened to Art Bell for 5 years. I just can't get my head around it.
Well, it's called UFO.
I know.
And it comes from Panther's Eyes, whatever that is, on
right.
YouTube.
Right.
And it's 115 minutes. But
all right, now say
everything
it again.
You said is very logical.
Say it again. What is it? What is it? It's on YouTube.
It's just titled UFO.
UFO.
And it's by the it's from Panther's Eyes. PANTHERSEYES.
Yeah. Well, I'll try to watch it. UFO
it's,
on YouTube.
You give it 10 minutes, and I defy you to click it off.
No, it's fascinating stuff. I love it. I love all of it.
Do. After watching it, I feel much better because they're not going to allow a nuclear holocaust.
Well, I just, you know, before I accept space aliens, I'd like to be able to accept the baby Jesus. You know what I'm saying?
So, okay.
Or St. Nick. All right, listen, Ray, thank you.
Well, thank you for taking the call.
All right. Thanks, Ray. Appreciate it. You take care. Go to YouTube, folks, and check this out. UFO, I believe Ray said. I'd love to believe that stuff. I really would. I'd like to stand there and welcome them. You know, I remember watching It Came from Outer Space and Them and all those movies back in the 50s. I'll see you tomorrow night, True Seekers. I'm sorry for the lack of phone calls tonight. I just, you know, when I'm off a night, I just go nuts the next night. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio Network.